You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You know, if we can get through this, then you know, we should go into MLS Cup with a lot of confidence.
It's been a crazy match. The scoreline alone, 5-2, and in a conference final is amazing. But I'm so proud of the guys. You know, we battled back many times in the game, and we showed so much character.
Tuesday, December 6th, it's Prospect 11's Aaron Nielsen. I'm Ian Clark, and days later, we're still somewhat speechless after TFC advanced past the Montreal Impact to host the MLS Cup Final. It's a preview episode of sorts as we first reflect on the Eastern Conference Final and the magnitude of the win, then look ahead at the Seattle Sounders and the history between these two clubs, their key players, aside from Jordan Morris, and how TFC might line up for their best chance to hoist the cup. All that and more on the next 60 minutes on Eastside Stand Up. Probably coming up midweek as some more content comes up, and this is a loose
preview
podcast, Toronto FC MLS Cup, just because I think there'll be a lot of things that'll happen through the week that might, you know, affect the overall accuracy of it.
Sure.
But I also was thinking, you know, after that game, even it was like the next morning, so many things were coming in my head that I didn't say that night. And I started that podcast off being like, I feel like I'm crashing from the result. And even now, I'm like, you're still kind of like almost at a loss for words.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm at, you know, since the result. Like, generally, I look at things almost more of an analytical thing, right? And the first thing I know is, because I don't think you guys mentioned in the pod, you sort of in the last pod, but how open that game was, right? And especially when Montreal, after the Odero goal, you know, you'd assume they just shut it down. Which is interesting, because I think that will give a good segue for the Seattle game, because I don't think the Seattle game will be as open or as exciting. But then after that, it's just, you know, it was an amazing game. You know, like some of the tweets I said, as I said, I'd love to have a debate with a person who hates soccer right now. It just happened to be that the goals in that game were more goals in that game than any game in the Stanley Cup Finals. So people saying, you know, there's no goals in soccer. So I don't think it was the best played game. But, you know, the atmosphere, especially what you guys experienced actually being at the game, seemed amazing. And it is surreal, right? You know, you don't really expect, especially, you know, how many games have you watched that gone to extra time and you automatically knew it was going to go to penalties, right? And so at that point, I was thinking, you know, would Toronto be better in penalties? Will it be a case where Drogba gets the fifth penalty and puts it against Toronto? You know, Dravinkel coming out, he's their main penalty taker, right? So that was my head. And then you just saw that thing. And then it was just like, you know, when Giroud scored, it was like, you thought that was the it. And then Ricketts, I guess, it's ridiculous. Was it going to be 10-2 at the end?
Yeah. Well, the one thing I didn't, we kind of touched on a little bit, but I don't think we really sort of dove into it or really examined it or said it, because I did want to sort of almost give a tip of the hat to Montreal, you know, because I think we'll look back on this Eastern Conference final and these two games is probably two of the best games. These two games will go down in club history, no doubt about it. Yeah. And it'll probably go down in league history, no doubt about it. And this wouldn't have happened were it not for the Montreal Impact. You can maybe make a case for maybe a team like Columbus, but I think, you know, in terms of the total package, right? The total package of, it's not just two teams facing each other. It's not just two cities. It's also, you know, two supporters group who have a lot of animosity against one another, that when we go there, we come with numbers. When they come here, they come with numbers.
Yeah.
And really, you know, almost a nauseating sense of, if we lose this game to this team, I really don't know if I can take it.
Yeah.
Like, if we had lost to Montreal, you know, and I've sort of found over the last couple of years ways to keep my emotions in check with Toronto FC.
Yeah.
But by Wednesday last week, that wasn't the case.
Oh, okay.
Like I you know, that was one of the few games where I did put a lot of hope out there, and I really did want the team to win. Mm. And I was emotionally attached to this result. Mm. As much as I'm a Canadian supporter, I've bought into this playoff run.
Yeah.
And I want to see it through right to the end. And again, circling back, I don't think we would have had these kind of emotions and this kind of game against any other team.
Yeah. Well, my position is a little bit different, but I was certainly immersed in this series, right? Because I don't necessarily have the animosity against Montreal, because a lot of times, you know, and you brought this up sort of in your last podcast, a lot of cases I like what Montreal does better than Toronto, right? And I like, you know, Bernier, for example, having a major impact on that team, and you know, and I like him. So it was more, for example, if Toronto had got knocked out by New York City FC, I probably would have given up on the playoff, right? Like, I don't, you know, it's not like I have bad feelings against New York City FC. It's just I don't care about them on their own, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, it was this, you know, caring about both teams and then the bigger picture and you know, the fact that a Canadian team gets to make it to the finals. And that, you know, and I think it adds to something that they played each other 7 times this year. So you really know the team well. And we do. We get kind of, you know, on our television, we get, you know, we mostly get TFC games, but we do get a fair share of Montreal games, right? So it's the teams we're most aware of than any other team in the league, right? Like, this is the interesting thing with Seattle, because they played Toronto 1 time in Toronto, and I remember it being a dire game, yeah. Which will probably also be
brought up. We'll touch on that for sure.
But I think I've only seen, a very big fan of MLS, but I've only seen Seattle like 2-3 times this year, right? And so I know most of the players because they've been established in the league for a couple of years, but at the same time, I don't really have that, oh, Seattle is a big opponent or anything like that. But Montreal, it's almost a league in its own, right?
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to add on, now that I've, like, again, have a moment of reflection of that result, and a couple of things where it's like, I don't know if you got this experience. I'm sure people who follow this team is like, the next day, people who know that you follow TFC that don't follow TFC were asking you about it.
Yeah.
And I'm randomly in places, and I'm hearing people who clearly aren't soccer people talking about the game and talking about the cup and what's an aggregate score?
Yeah.
And so who are we playing in the final? And is it going to be sold? Like, all these kind of questions, we were like, wow, it's like, fuck, 10 years on. You kind of think, geez, if we hadn't had these idiots running the club for the first years, that we could have probably been
bigger.
This seed could have been planted a long time ago.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't want to get into that. But my point was that, to add on to what we were just saying, Montreal, I kind of think, like, that game on Wednesday, it's almost, I kind of feel like I'm maybe saying from my perspective, it's the night I've dreamt of.
Oh, okay.
Since this team has been, because they've had great games and you saw the potential. And even I'm thinking like 2008 when Canada played Jamaica, you could see that the city or the country was on the precipice of really something special. And the closest thing, and I think like a lot of supporters, you know, we follow Europe and we kind of have that, you know, you talk about European nights.
Yeah.
And I think this is like the closest you could get in North America to that kind of experience. You know, like I think of as a Liverpool sort of, the most recent one was that last year when they played Dortmund. And that's a result that Liverpool supporters will probably remember for a long time, with them coming back and getting that result and moving on in the Europa League. And I think this is one that this night, the people were there, they're probably going to talk about it forever, for the rest of their lives, as like that was the first one. And I really do think it was a night that you can kind of, you know, maybe not with the biggest teams in the world, but in a general sense, you can compare it the electricity of really important European or South American, you know, tournament games.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like something, again, that was like, you walked out of that and you're like, wow.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing to me there is that it's an MLS game, right? Because I always assumed if you had a good, consistent team in MLS, the exciting games would be the North American Champions League against the Mexican team and showing that MLS is better than Mexico, or even going farther than that, making, even though to European teams it doesn't matter, but that World Championship thing where you're playing Bayern Munich or whoever just won the Champions League. Like, I think those are the iconic moments just because of the level where MLS is compared to other leagues in the world. So it's interesting, but, you know, maybe the brand of MLS, that style of soccer, you know, that you could have these wide open games and stuff. Like, I get, you know, the funny thing in terms of comments is I get comments from people in Europe and how they say, like, I love MLS because it's so exciting. And, you know, and it's like, it's almost that anti or opposite to this Euro snobbery that we get here where the quality isn't good, so I'm not going to watch it. But the irony is if the quality is a bit poorer, it gives more opportunity for things to happen, right? Because again, you know, you taking this game or taking the Montreal game, for example, you know, most teams would have gone there and you know, put nine defenders and held up the game. And strategically or technically, the game would have been more what you would expect, but you're not going to get the 5-2 sort of results from it. And in that sense, it does. In sense, when with MLS, it does remind me of, like, for example, in Europe, a team like Fenerbahce doing very well, right? Because you don't expect anything from them, but then you see the passion of their fans and, you know, the willingness of their players, and you do get this sort of kinship to them, where you get this admiration for them. And I imagine most people who watch a Toronto-Montreal series would have seen that. You know, it was just, you know, on top of that, you had the weather, the rain. So it did. It almost did. It almost became like a book or a fantasy or a movie story than reality.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, like, again, like I said, one to remember. And I'm trying to think if I had another outro point, but I think it's like, that's, I just wanted to, like, touch base on that game. I didn't know if there was anything we wanted to maybe kick around in terms of any players specifically that stood out from that game that I don't know if we touched on. I mean, I did want to, I still give our props to, like, Ricketts. Mm-hmm. And obviously the substitutions were obviously the biggest one. And even though one came out of a based on an injury, but it just was a game where it seemed like everything kind of the last maybe 6 weeks. And it's not like, you know, Vanny really hasn't changed anything up.
Yeah.
So that's also the amazing thing. And it's just, and you almost, I'm starting to wonder too, is like, you know, when we talk about this 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, I'm wondering if we're just starting to see it actually synergize.
Well, the two things that I noticed is, number one, at the beginning of the game, Cooper seemed more into it and up for it, and, you know, scored a goal, but I think he was more into the game, which I thought hurt them in the Montreal game, because, you know, I thought they did look, you know, they put enough pressure at the end of the game to put us in the situation that they only need one goal in the final game. But at the same time, they didn't dominate as they did with the New York and Philadelphia games, because Cooper wasn't as into the game. The other one that I've noticed is, I think players like Hägglund understand his role now. I would have to look at his goal and the situations he was in more detail, but he seemed to be more aware, like he seemed to be more willing to jump in and throw his head into that, and to be more secure with what his position is, right? Because I think one of the problems is adapting, you know, 3-5-2 is now becoming, it's funny because it's now becoming common, right? Because Man City and Chelsea played yesterday. I think both played a 3-5-2 of some
variation.
But at the same time, I think for Hägglund, he probably didn't play that position ever in his life. So it took him a few games to first say, oh, I can't fuck up on defense. But now it's like I'm comfortable with what my role is. Now I can run, you know, be an extra guy on the corner kick or stand behind, but jump in there when the opportunity presents itself. So I do think there is a more comfortability. You know, I think as we get into detail of the Seattle game, you know, there was weaknesses that were exploited by Montreal that might not be the case with Seattle. And then there was advantages that you get playing Montreal that you might not get in other games. So I still don't know. You know, I would rather long-term, like if this was next season, I would have an adaptable formation based on your opponent, opposed to just saying, we're going to do this no matter what. Because I do think you can get exploited by being too one-dimensional in terms of your setup. But
yeah, and I think that's, okay, so I think the transition I'm thinking of is, now let's talk about this MLS Cup final. And I think, you know, what I always try to go for is, I'm trying to find the story. Right. And I think we were lucky through a lot of this playoffs that there was stories.
Okay.
Right from the, you know, Philadelphia not so much to a degree, but like New York City, there was a story in terms of a budding rivalry between these two teams of just, you know, with Jovinko involved and lots of goals. And then Montreal, of course, there's a rivalry there. And as you're watching the Western Conference unfold and you see it's Colorado against Seattle, and I think you brought that up where it was funny that it could have been, if Colorado got through, you know, there have been the story of Colorado won an MLS Cup in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
And now Toronto is going to Colorado, hopefully, to win one there.
Yeah.
But then I look at, the thing I look at with Seattle is, I think there is history with Toronto and Seattle that's, I think, is really intriguing, especially when I think back to really the last time Toronto probably should have said to themselves, you know, we've got a contender, we've got a good team, was the start of 2009.
Mm.
And that was Seattle's first year in MLS.
Mm.
And, you know, Toronto started that season, if I have the chronology correct, I'm pretty sure it was that great win in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and then I think we went to Columbus and drew. And while that was happening, you know, the expansion team, in quotes, went out and beat, I think it was they beat the Red Bulls 3-0 off the hop, who were in the Memphis Club the year before. Yeah. So everyone was shocked. Yeah. And then they beat another team. I can't remember who the next game was, 2-0, I think. And I remember sort of thinking, well, come on now. They're coming to Toronto. Mm. And we're the real deal this year. They haven't faced a team like Toronto yet. Yeah, I mean, this whole sort of a little bit too much bravado, too much cockiness. And it was a miserable, like miserable day. Yeah. Raining, freezing cold. And Seattle just embarrassed us.
Yeah.
They just made us look really bad.
Yeah.
And that's sort of always stuck with me. It's like, that's my
initial impression. Well, I remember, and I do think it was a loss as well, was at the beginning of the season, we did a sort of West Coast road trip. And there was an early game in Seattle, and it was one of those seasons where we thought the team had something, and they didn't have anything.
No.
And that Seattle game sort of showcased that. But I think underlying to any non-Seattle-Toronto FC fan is these are the two teams who want to buy the championship, right? They're the teams that have supposedly the most ambitious, you know, Toronto had credit for putting MLS on the map for their fan base and their interest in the game. And then that got sort of overran by Seattle, mm-hmm. because Seattle had the same level of enthusiasm, except in a stadium that was two or three times the size. So, you know, and then since then, both teams have failed, but tried to compensate their fan base by, you know, putting as much financial things as they could and trying to, you know, make their team a winner. And so anybody who's not from Toronto or Seattle probably sees this as either, you know, you can look at it as either reward for effort, right? You know, if you try this hard, you deserve it because you tried this hard. Or, you know, these are the two teams that if they didn't have the money, if they, you know, if these two teams were in Kansas City or whatever,
yeah,
they wouldn't be as equally as successful as they are now.
Yeah. Kind of thing, right? The chronology is interesting too, because it's like you kind of look at both. I mean, Seattle obviously had maybe a more like sustained success in quotes, you know, yeah. Let's say a sustained competitiveness,
yeah.
From when they entered the league. And then I would say, even though they've like, you know, they had Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey, you know, there's a bit of a dip,
mm-hmm.
In terms of their performance and their sort of strength isn't the word I'm thinking of, but you didn't, you know, for the last maybe couple of years, they weren't the heavyweight.
Yeah.
You didn't feel like they were that heavyweight team that they were in previous years. And then Toronto's kind of coming back up, and the 2014 was that opener where we won 2-1, right? Where,
yeah.
And maybe that's where Siggy Schmidt highlights Osorio, because it was Osorio slotting a beautiful through ball, if I'm not mistaken. I remember correctly, it was to Jermaine Defoe who put it in.
That yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
That right? So he would have been right on the sideline seeing
that.
But, you know, I can remember last year was the year, like even though we beat them, last season was the one I remember watching. I think it was Toronto away to Seattle, and that was the first time I was like, I don't think this team's very good.
You mean
like,
Seattle?
Yeah, like outside of Obafemi. Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, Toronto's a given until the last 3 months. But Seattle, that was the first time I ever looked at them. And I was like, outside of Obafemi Martins and Dempsey, this is a very ordinary team to me. Mm-hmm. And even this year, which is an interesting, we can talk about the story of Seattle this year. When we played them earlier in the season, I was really disappointed that we came in with a 1-1 draw, because I was like, this is not a good team.
Yeah.
However, here we are in, well, December, which is an absurd time of year, but to be talking about this, but you can make a case that, if I'm not mistaken, Seattle's probably the best team in the league since August.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Again, I think that, to go back in terms of one of your other points, just for the future, I think you could argue that Toronto and Seattle will be poster child for MLS for years to come, right? Just because I think both cities, you know, and this is no disrespect to Vancouver, but I think both cities represent what North American soccer is, right? You know, because Toronto has that sort of multicultural fan base with an avid fan base from all places in soccer in the world. And Seattle has that English weather where it could be in the middle of England, it could be London, it could be in the Premier League, and no one would notice the difference, right? Because of the way the weather is. So soccer just naturally happens there because you can play in the middle of December outside and not be cold, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think for the next 50, 60 years, as long as MLS exists, I think Seattle and Toronto will always be sort of major markets. You know, we'll try to say LA, we'll try to say New York, but realistically, in terms of soccer culture, I think those two teams will be defined as the two biggest teams in the league. So again, just to add to that, I think that's interesting. I think Seattle fits perfectly with your, you know, you should quote this or you should copyright this thing with your analogy. It's not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's
catching the wave.
Catching the wave at the right time. And I think when we break down Seattle, you'll see that, right? Because you'll underestimate their players in terms of a whole season or how good they are in 90 minutes. But then you think about it, right? You know, like, for example, Tyrone Mears is their right back, who usually most teams put, you know, Joe Blow at right back because they don't think it's that important to their overall setup. Yeah, you know, here's a guy who has Premier League experience. Here's a guy who played multiple years in England. And he comes here and he's not the most effective guy because he's not the highest skilled guy or the fastest guy or anything like that. But, you know, in these one game, you know, elimination things, you want a smart right back. You know, we see it with Morrow and when we have in our own team. So I think as you go player for player, Seattle will impress you more than instinctively what they should do. I think the other big story, and of course we'll talk about it, is this Lodeiro coming to Seattle and his direct comparisons to Giovinco, right? In terms of being the best player in the league, taking a team on his back and being the difference. And that's since midseason when you said Seattle might be the best team, is that's when Lodeiro came into it. I'm almost compare Lodeiro more, he's a different player, but I compare him more to Drogba's success last year than Giovinco's success since he's been with Toronto, because I think it's a case where it's not only what Lodeiro is capable of doing, it's that teams have been surprised by his ability. And I think that's what happened. You saw that with Drogba last year, is no one really expected Drogba to be a huge success. And then all of a sudden he scores hat-tricks and does all this kind of stuff. And Lodeiro is different because he's younger. I think he's only 27.
Yeah.
But he had injury issues in Europe when he was with Ajax. And he could never really establish himself. He's been moving around and stuff like that. And he has a lot of good attributes that we can go into that makes him an effective player. But that's why in this game, and you know, hopefully he's healthy because he came off in the last game, I think this is Giovinco's game to shine. I don't only think that because of that matchup, right? But I think the other thing that's scary for Toronto in this matchup is one of the things you could take advantage of with Montreal was is their center backs were not, Altidore was very strong, Ricketts came in, was very effective. And, you know, I think Seattle with Torres and Marshall are quite, you know, scary in terms of holding you back. And, you know, there's big as Altidore, for example, and could, you know, control that part of the game. So I think, you know, this game might, you know, I don't expect this is a wide open game with Montreal. And I think this game might take individual brilliance to change the game than strategy, which I think was the thing that beat Montreal.
Yeah, and I think that's the potential of this game, is I think you might see, and you look at Seattle, and rightly so, which is incredible for his age, the name that you're going to think of is Jordan Morris. Mm-hmm. And he's lived up to everything that he was supposed to in terms of if he was going to go to Europe instead of going to MLS. And you wonder if it was a player that, is that would he have done well there? And is he really that good? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I watched some of the games against Colorado, and you can tell he's in a different gear than ever. Mm-hmm. From my eyes. I mean, you can just, he just, for just like, you know, a white guy forward, just to put it like that, you know what I mean? He's got it. Like, you can just tell that he's all, and we saw when he played against us. I mean, yeah. The goal he scored was amazing, and it was more than that. You could just see the way that he ran, that he stood out. But the other thing I think that's interesting about Seattle is, of course, like, I mean, he's not the top guy. He's not the centerpiece of the top for this team. And, you know, you kind of talked about the way these teams are built. And I think that's what's interesting about Seattle is that, you know, they've also gone out and got foreign talent.
Yeah.
But it's not names you'd recognize, but it's like the kind of thing. Now, I'm not going to compare them in this sense. I mean, like, we brought in Giovinco. I think average MLS fan, average soccer fan might not know what Giovinco's pedigree is.
Yeah.
And when you look at someone like Nelson Valdez or Lodeiro or even Freiburg or Andreas Ivanchitz.
Yeah.
You're going, who are these guys?
Yeah.
But then you look at their pedigree, you know what I mean? And you have Valdez, who had spent time at Borussia Dortmund,
yeah,
and has a sort of like a Bundesliga background that's pretty substantive. And yeah, then you look at even a Lodeiro, who's, you know, he's got that time where he was at Ajax,
yeah,
and he bounced around, but he played at Botafogo, I think, and Corinthians, and yeah, played some pretty big teams. And
Boca Juniors.
Yeah, and then he came from Boca Juniors, some big, yeah, South American clubs. And even Freeburg, who was there, left, and then came back.
Yeah.
You know, that's, these guys have a lot of experience in highly technical leagues. Mm-hmm. You know, they may not be guys that can single-handedly win it for you, but I think that's part of what I'm concerned about, is these are the pieces that where Morris can shine. And with Lodero now in there, what we've seen of him is he is, you know, like you don't want to compare him, like you said, to a Jovinko, but I mean, he's got the sweet set piece.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's got that potential, and he's got the potential to unlock Morris.
Yeah.
And also he's the guy that if, oh, I'm going to start focusing on Morris, well, he'll come in backdoor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he'll finish. He'll finish the chance. There's going to be problems, but I agree with that assessment where it's like this, to me, this game doesn't match up like Montreal. I don't see the same problems at all that Montreal posed for us in terms of like, there's no Adoro.
Yeah.
Who's like not a technically strong player whatsoever, but is like
speed.
Yeah, just like a full on speedster that will, you know, or in a Piatti quite on the level where it's like, geez, if you give this guy too much time on the ball, it's really game over.
Yeah.
And with that, he can do anything with it from anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I noticed, and I think that's the reason that they struggled this year, is I think those players you mentioned on Seattle lack consistency, right? Like, that's why I don't compare Lodero to Javinko, because Javinko, for the most part, now we've seen the games this year where he's been less effective, but for the most part, he makes an impact every game. You know, he averages 4 or 5 shots every game, right? The criticism against Lodero historically prior to coming to MLS was that he was an in-and-out guy, right? Like one game you'll see him, he's like the most exciting player you've ever seen in your life. And the next game he'll just be an average 6 rating or whatever. He just play on the pitch. So, and then, you know, Valdez is a classic example because he hasn't even scored for Seattle this year, right? So, yeah.
Or he might have a couple.
Oh, well, he had the playoff goal, but he didn't score in the regular season. So he's a guy you expect a great return of, but it's been kind of a disappointment in terms of thing. And so there is a bit of, you know, there is a bit of Jermaine Defoe-esque about Seattle, right? Where Seattle thinks they're making smart decisions from the beginning, and then when it comes onto the pitch, it doesn't perform as well as it should. And that's the thing. Like, I still think Toronto, you know, it's hard. It's a very difficult game because I do think it's an even, you know, 50-50 game. But I do think in terms of individual brilliance, I do put Toronto slightly ahead of Seattle, because I put more on the back of Javinko if Javinko, you know, does well, and I put more on the back even Altidore than I would comparable players to Seattle. But as I said, I think it's going to be, you know, if it's 0-0, it would not surprise me, because I think, you know, when you have guys like Alonso in the center who's designed to close down the game, when you have Rondon,
Rondon,
he's like almost Azario plus, right? Like, he's a similar player in some sense to Azario, but he's adapted more to a role where he can be a defensive midfielder but also be an attacking guy, right? Which Azario still hasn't fully developed into in terms of TFC. And then, you, as I said, the back line, right? You know, when you have Mears, Jones, Marshall, and Torres. Now, I think Torres is a bit of a loose cannon, right? And so I think maybe Altidore can get underneath his skin and create opportunities that way. But this is the only team in the league, you know, and we're surrounded by Fry, too, we know very well.
Yeah.
And there's a story between Toronto and Seattle right there.
Stephen Fry coming back to Toronto to play for
now. It's game.
Yeah, right.
We should give him a 100-game award before the game starts. But I don't think you could say any team in MLS, like teams in MLS like Dallas and Colorado have developed defensive of that fluke, right, through MLS routes. But no team has actively said, let's start from the defense and build our team from there. And Seattle is probably one of the only teams that have done that. I've found, you know, games I've seen Seattle, especially in that Colorado series, I found them very boring. I found them very slow compared to some teams, as you said, what Adoro could do for Montreal. And because of that, I find them breakable, because you're going to get opportunities against them. Not necessarily cutting, you know, 100% opportunities, but you're gonna get the ball. You can build stuff, right? But at the same time, you know, in a lot of cases, those are the most difficult teams to play because they're just so aware.
And an interesting thought I just had.
Okay,
I just had
the light bulb just went on your head.
That when we're thinking about the, you know, this is a game where players can possibly stand apart. Like a game, this could be the game that Jovinko stands out. And now I'm trying to wonder, and let me throw those out there, because I'm thinking the Montreal series, they really shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Montreal, you know, they're from their midfield back, especially when you have someone like a Donadel.
Yep.
And I'm trying to, like, this might be a bit of a stretch, or a Bernadello. Guys that have a European, you know, European flavor to them. And a Donadel who is like, I know this kind of guy. I play against these kind of guys. I know how we shut these kind of guys down.
Yeah.
And we're looking at Seattle where it's Roldan, Alonso, Marshall, Evans, Torres,
yeah.
you know, Mears and Jones. They're not used, they didn't grow up playing against this type of Italian, right? Like yeah, this kind yeah, of guy.
True.
And I wonder if there's a, like we're looking at their experience in terms of Europe and that technique, and it's top heavy. It's not back. It's not going back.
Right.
And maybe that's where we might see the potential. Like that's where a game where maybe Altidore might not get away with he did because he did against Montreal because of that reason.
Yeah.
This might be a game where Altidore is more shut down against a physical team, but where Jovinko can shine because they might get frustrated. They might foul him. He might be able to dance around them and do all those things that the impact with their background probably was like, oh, we know how to handle this.
Yeah.
You know, you either just clog the middle and let him fall on his own.
Yeah.
Or you just play them off, you know, this XYZ technique.
Well,
there's,
yeah,
there's
the,
a thought.
The other, no, I think it's a fair thought. And the other thing that's interesting is from my watching Fry with Toronto and watching Fry elsewhere, is I think the thing that he is accessible to is the long range shot, right? Like that's the thing. Like I thought his reputation was hurt in Toronto because of some, you know, outrageous goals that were scored against, you know, wasn't it a park horse that went from...
Well, that was Stamatopoulos.
Oh, that was
Stamatopoulos. That was the year before. Okay, that was the year before. Okay. He's off the hook on that one.
Okay. But I remember a couple long-range shots and people were like, you know, like, because you can't do anything against those, right?
Yeah.
So those just kind of happen. So in that sense, I think in terms of style of play, I just think that Seattle will say, okay, come to us, Toronto, right? Like we're big, we're tough, we're strong, we can handle anything that you give to us, you know, come to us, right? Where with, as you said, in your analogy, Montreal's design was to stop them in the midfield. And I think Seattle's design is to stop them before they hit the danger zone, which is typical soccer. Like if you're teaching soccer, you don't say clog the midfield, you say protect, you know, the box, right?
Yeah.
And you saw Montreal getting exploited because they didn't protect the box and giving Toronto good opportunities within right in front of the net. So I do think you do see a bit of that. And I also think that, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how Cooper plays as well, because I think Cooper also provides that sort of midfield ball control and things like that. And I think an interesting thing, you know, because I didn't mention Torres, I think it'd be interesting to see how aggressive Seattle is, right? Like if Seattle plays back. You know, they are the road team. They are, you know, they might watch what Toronto's done in terms of how much Toronto's tried to apply pressure and then they defend against that. Because I think that could, you know, if we get, I think it was to, you know, you could come in on this, but I thought it was Toronto's advantage against Montreal that they did get under Montreal's skin. You know, I thought that body check, I guess, for lack of a better term, that Altidore did against Bardello was a game changer in a sense, right? Because what that did is it almost prevented Montreal from playing back. Like Montreal was in the game and it was aggressive, right? And so that allowed for the more open play.
Yeah.
Because they lost their cool in a sense. And so I think if Toronto can get that, and you know, Alonso's a guy who can potentially lose his cool. Torres is a guy who can potentially lose cool. Valdez is a guy who can potentially lose his cool. If they can get that, you know, then maybe that will put the game in Toronto's, you know, might make it more faster paced, but it could also put the game in Toronto's
favor. And one thing I wanted to actually connect from the Montreal game to this one that I think is in Toronto's favor, and I want to segue into the Toronto's formation.
Yeah.
Maybe just get your thoughts on if you see any changes and what you would expect. But, you know, what the Montreal game showed us was that Toronto now is a real danger aerially.
Mm.
And offset pieces, off corners. I mean, that's where a lot of the chances came from until the end where, you know, Ricketts got that one on the counter, so to speak. But one thing we've seen from Seattle, and they've had an incredible run of form, but in the games that they've lost, and it is worth mentioning, of that incredible streak that they've had, all their losses have been on the road.
Mm.
And their poor, well, I think all their draws have also been on the road.
Mm.
So that's something that's a caveat to remember with that. But a lot of the goals have come from crosses or aerial threats against them, and I'm sort of like identifying that as something where I'm curious, especially where if you do a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2 with wingbacks, and how we've seen Betashore and Morrow now all of a sudden be able to crossing these balls.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something I wonder if it's like Toronto might feel a little bit of confidence being like, hey, we kind of have something that's working and we have different ways to make this happen. And this is against the opponent who's of late or the second half of the season, when they've fallen apart, it has been through not being able to deal with areas, balls into the area. And even if I think it was a Dallas game, whether it was Akindele's goal or the next, the one after, where I mean, all four defenders were in the 6-yard box, and they still got the header in.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, it was almost Toronto-esque, you know, where you kind of make fun of them for that kind of thing. But I also flip that on the other side, where I do think Toronto is also in a position where you feel. I'm not saying it's necessarily a Seattle problem; it's kind of an MLS problem, but it's something where I think if you're potent and you're designed and you focus, not necessarily focus, but if you execute on that, I think the opportunity.
Well, I think part of that, in terms of where Seattle struggled, I think part of that is the difference between the Eastern Conference and Western Conference in the MLS, right? I think in the Western Conference, you have more traditional target man and more traditional, you know, even guys like even their Giovinco-esque players like Diaz or Ladero with Seattle, they're more crosser guys in the box, right? You know, with Giovinco, he's always looking for the dribble or shot before he's ever looking for the cross, even though he has a lot of cross assists. So I think that, you know, I think statistically, if you looked at the amount of chances compared to the amount of goals, it might even out more, right? Because I think in, you know, when you're playing in the East, other than playing against Kamara, who's now with New England, used to be with Columbus, but you're playing against City or you're right, you know, it's more of the, you know, it's more of the counter or more of the individual play, right? Vila or someone like that. So, you know, it's interesting because there is becoming a sort of style from East and West. And because we haven't seen Seattle that often, there is going to be a sort of filling out stage, right? Because we don't know what we can necessarily get away with, right? Like, the irony is, you know, and this is the funny thing with analysis, is what you're looking for is if Seattle overemphasizes on one thing, how do you exploit them with the other thing, right?
Right.
So it's almost the opposite, right? Now, that being said, I do think, as I said, I think Torres is a loose cannon, and so I think you can do it. And Marshall is your... Like, again, it's kind of funny, right? Because at the same time, you know, I like Seattle because of the quality of players, and they have a lot of those guys who played many years in MLS, which is a bonus and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, these guys are playing MLS because they're not great players, right? You know, and so Marshall is a guy who could either be, you know, a folk hero for your club, or a guy like, why do we have this 6'5" guy who can't even move standing in our 18-yard box every game, right? Mm-hmm. So again, I just think, you know, I think it's interesting. I'll be interested to see how many clear-cut chances there are in the game, right? Because I think the game will be more bogged down in the midfield. Like, I don't think they'll even allow that to happen. Like, you and I have had the chance to watch the MLS Cup final the past few years, and they've always been completely different than what we expect the team to be. You know, like the last year was that goofy
goal right off the
Portland hop and stuff like that. So it's never, you know, and that's always the case. You know, if you watch FA Cup finals, their games are always different than how you see the team play the whole year, just because so much is put on to that game. So I don't know if it would have the same flavor as a normal regular season MLS game, although I do think it's significant that when these two teams played, and I don't think Ladero was on Seattle at that time, right?
I don't think so, no.
No. So it was Seattle just kind of coping with the opposing team. And that's what I'm thinking. You know, I don't think people should look for a 5-2 result in this game. And that's the only thing that I can almost guarantee. I can't guarantee this team's going to win or this team's going to lose. I just don't think it's going to be as open as we saw with the past two games in Montreal.
Yeah, and I think that the last thing I just want to touch on is, of course, Toronto FC. And without being, like we said at the beginning, you know, we're doing this leading into the week, so a lot of things could change. You know, I didn't get the sense, I don't think either of us heard anything about an injury update on Giovinco.
Yeah.
My observation was when he went off in the game, I did notice at the end when the celebrations were going on, he was walking over with that. So, you know, if it was a really serious injury, I would imagine he would have been in the change room, that being addressed. He wouldn't have been still sitting on the bench, and he wouldn't have gone running around with everyone and celebrating the win. So that's something that hoping we can expect to see him start that game. But I think the question is going to be the midfield. You know, we all saw Will Johnson go in instead of Jonathan Osorio.
Yeah.
And against Montreal, that brought just another level of grit.
Yeah.
Then I'm sure Bezbachenko was checking that off his spreadsheet, being like, yes, we've just increased our grip by 25%.
Yeah.
This is what we need to win this game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm curious to see. And of course, you know, we talked about on the podcast. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Benoit Cheyroux, but I think what I didn't articulate correctly was that to do this formation, you need quick midfielders, I think. You need guys that, because if you're going to have Betashore and Moro up in line with your forwards, you need to have midfielders who can track back. And simply, Cheyroux's not that guy. I mean, that's something later in the game, maybe when the other team is losing a step and can't exploit that as much. Yeah. He's a perfect addition.
Well, you also need someone to take the ball away offensively from Bradley. And that's not a criticism to Bradley because he lacks offense. That's a criticism to Bradley because he should be playing farther back because he should be protecting the back three, right? And that's where he's been most effective this year. And it was the games where, you know, he was a bit desperate. Like, I didn't go through all the analytics from the last game, but because of Cooper's ability to be more effective, it allowed more, you know, allowed Bradley to be more, you know, less frantic in terms of where he had to be and how he had to be a part of things and all that kind of stuff. So
I feel like Will Johnson allows him that.
To some extent, yeah.
He's kind of like, I've said it before, and I don't mean it in a mean way. I mean, I can think of like a Bradley Light. Mm-hmm. I mean, like literally, physically, he's smaller than him. Yeah. And he brings the same aggression. He does have the potential that he can score a goal. He can give a set piece. Like, he can do all pretty much the same things. He's just a smaller version of him.
Yeah.
And that allows maybe him the comfort to be like, okay, if I do these things, I have someone there. And I think in my head, and this is not necessarily a rational reason, but I almost feel bad for Will Johnson because he missed out on that. He missed out on a Champions League final.
Yeah. Yeah.
He essentially missed out on last year's MLS Cup final.
Yeah.
And here he is again.
Yeah.
I would maybe make a petition that it isn't going to, you know, it's, I don't think it's going to be to detriment if he starts this game.
Sure.
Over like Osorio, for example.
Sure, sure.
And I think, I mean, this is a great problem to have. And that's what we were talking about. It's like, okay, do I start Osorio or start Will Johnson? Either way, that switch is a nice problem to have and a good thing to have in your back pocket later on in the game. Or Cheyroux, for example.
Yeah.
That, okay, if I bring this guy in, I've got a whole new something that we can kind of hopefully exploit a different, like, they're not carbon copies of each other, right?
No.
So it's, I'm looking forward to that. And that's probably what I would say. I think we might see the same lineup as we did against Montreal.
Yeah, I would say that's the case. I think the Johnson addition almost reflected the game because I thought that Toronto felt that they would have to be more gritty and more into it because they needed that goal and they knew something was on the line. The frustrating part with Osorio and not Osorio is you're a prettier team with Osorio in, right? And I think it's every team's dream to be the more effective, more passing, more control, more possession. And Osorio provides that. But, you know, as we've, you know, and this is not a slight of Osorio, but since he's been with the team, we've always said that the problem is that he isn't, I guess his final instincts isn't that, you know, cutting edge, right? And so he can be frustrating in that sense. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because in that sense, think if Johnson was in there, I think it might give Seattle a slight advantage because it would mean that Toronto's playing two defensive-minded midfielders and Seattle's only playing one, right? And so that could change possession. It could change, you know, it can give Rondon or Freiburg more space because they're identified as holding midfielders, but they're more a Jonathan Osorio style of play than aggressive like Bradley, Alonso, and Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, it's sort of how Toronto wants to play the game, right? It's how they want to dictate the game and stuff like that. So the other point I was just going to make was cliche, but how do you think the 12th man will affect the game? Because it's not only, you know, where people are sitting and all that kind of stuff that's been an issue this past week, but I imagine you're going to have a cheesy mid-halftime show where you're all going to be on the field dancing to some bad band. You're going to have pregame shit that's going to go on for 4 hours, you're going to have the end of the game, which is going to be ridiculous as well.
Yeah.
So it changes. Like, the flavor of the game completely changes, right? Like, even I think it's going to be surreal and almost in a negative sense for you going to the game, because you're going to expect this quick, you know, right into the game. You know, I heard you guys and Steven was saying, you know, like the South End was singing before the game started and all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, they're going to put Shakira or someone out before the game starts here, and they're going to want you to shut up, or they're going to have, you know, airplanes going by and a 6-minute American
fireworks show and stuff.
Show. And then not only TFC's, you know, marketing garbage, but we also have to add to that the MLS marketing garbage. So I think it's just going to be surreal, right? And that could be a problem, because I think if you look at past MLS Cups, the starts have always been sort of staggered, stop start, because no one knows what to make from it, right? Because they go through all these seasons, and one of the great things about soccer is it's a quick game. You just get in there, you go from the start. You know, like, we even criticize sometimes with Toronto because they try to do the openings a little too much. And you're standing, you know, I don't even know, do they do the, I think they even do the dignitary thing where the team stands there and everyone shakes their hand.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and that's it. That's actually a pretty interesting observation, because the funny thing is, last year, I think we said this on the podcast, I think it was on Gaffer and Hooligan we did it for, that, you know, we were trying to watch the game in my house.
We left.
We were half an hour late, but the game hadn't kicked off. We actually saw the start of the game like later than when it started. So I was trying to get TS. I didn't have TSN. I thought I could get it on MLS Live. It was blacked out on MLS Live. We're calling this cable guy. We're going through his whole things. We sprint over to Football Factory. Game hadn't started yet.
Well,
and we're like, holy shit. So my point is that, you know, it's a good connection to 12th man. A weeknight game is such a different flavor than a weekend game.
Yeah, yeah.
And a night game is, of course, you know, weekday games, not during the day anyways.
Yeah.
But a weeknight game is so much different than a weekend game. You know, in a way, you know, the 12th man needs to be warmed up too, or that they can't be cold going into this, like, fit literally, but also, you know, in terms of, like, there has to be that crescendo at kickoff that it's like, okay, now it's going off.
Yeah.
And you're going to have that problem where, I have a feeling, if I had to, like, make a prediction on the 12th man, it won't go off until Toronto scores.
Okay.
Right? Like, until we see something, it probably will be good.
Yeah.
But not, like, the midweek.
Yeah.
Right? Until we're scoring, or if it looks like we're in control, like, let's say, theoretically, knock on wood, Toronto went up and was in control of the game, then you might start seeing the whole stadium really start to bounce and really start getting excited. But I think...
Well, you're going to the game, so I think it's interesting, especially for people who are not. Like, does it say on your ticket, show up at 6 o'clock, or like what? Like,
I don't have my physical ticket.
Oh, okay.
Yet. And you know what? Another interesting thing is that I someone made a point of is, like, you know, we're buying our tickets online on Ticketmaster. I would like a physical ticket.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah,
I hope, like, I don't want to print out.
Yeah.
For the MLS Cup final. I'd actually like to have that ticket. Yeah. I don't know how we. And then, hey, let me put it out there to the listener. If anyone knows how you go about doing that.
Because you would have gotten season tickets as tickets, right?
Yeah, season tickets, right? And it's like, you would think if you went to, they got to have, there's got to be.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, I would, and even if they don't, it'd be a nice thing for the club, maybe like the next year, if you were a season ticket holder and you had those tickets. They're like, if you were in the MLS Cup final, here's a physical ticket for it.
No, I agree. Well, you know, 80,000 people are going to be claiming to be at that game.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Especially if they win.
Yeah.
So you want proof that you're there, right? It's like the 77 Blue Jay opener or whatever. Yeah. Like, no, there's 500,000 people
who are at that game. True enough.
I saw some weather thing. I think there might be flurries. It's -1, -2.
Yeah.
So it's not horrible, right?
Nope.
Like, it could be a much worse, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're there at 6 o'clock to see, you know, the new hit, it supposedly starts at 8 p.m. On Saturday. So,
well, that's actually a good thing then.
Yeah. I think that would provide a bit of atmosphere. It'd be a bit colder, but I think it'll provide a bit more atmosphere and stuff like that. The fireworks will at least
Yeah, there you go. Fireworks will go off. But I mean, you know, another thing too is that, like, we said this before the Montreal game where we got lucked out and got great weather, that I don't want to sit if it's freezing cold like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be up. I'm going to be singing. I'm going to be, like, moving around. Hopefully that's all that encourages those people to do who's not just in the South End. And that was the great thing too, I should add, about Wednesday night. That atmosphere wasn't isolated in the South End.
Yeah, it was the whole stadium. Well, we even experienced that when we went to the New York City FC game, how it was collective, right? Where it usually is the South End or small pockets, but that felt like
Even in the South End, it's not collective.
Yeah,
usually in the South End, it's pockets.
Pockets.
And that, I mean, Wednesday night, that was like end from 111 to, is it 119 or 120? Anyways, the whole back, I mean, the whole back.
Yeah, and you have, you with the final, you automatically have pockets because sections of the seats have not been given to TFC supporters, right? So you might be sitting beside, you know, the CEO of the Honda. Yeah. You're going to have to teach them all the songs and shit like that when you're at the game with them. But yeah, no, I just think it's, you know, again, it's funny just as a side story, but back in the day, and I think this was pretty present. Like, I think this is less than, I don't know, since, yeah, probably since Toronto was in the league, they used to have the games on ABC. On normal television, right? And it was like the only MLS game that they would have on normal
television. Probably one of the only times I watched MLS.
And so, but the game would always start at 3. Mm-hmm. And they'd always have Shakira or someone
singing. Always in LA.
And always, or something like that. But the problem was, is that the games always went to extra time. And so they would have to stop the game because they only had to the slot of 6 o'clock because news was on. So you'd be watching the game. And then they go, well, go over to ESPN right now to see the end of the game. And in Canada, you can't watch ESPN. So you never got the end of the game.
Yeah.
But I think in some sense, MLS is smart to make it their event opposed to trying to cater to a larger audience. And we're still a week away. So part of that's that. But I haven't heard, you know, the amount of Seattle people coming to the city.
I think they're giving them two sections.
Oh, are they?
Two sections in the north, like the northeast corner in 200s. Traditionally, that far top corner has been for away support.
Okay.
I think they're giving them like whatever that is. Two something and another one next to it. I think they're giving them two full blocks.
Mm, okay.
That can be, someone can obviously can confirm.
And
that.
Then the other thing, which was, I wasn't at the final for the last MLS Cup final in Toronto, but the one thing they designed for that, it was supposed to be a week of celebration, right? And so they have events correlating to the final. And again, I haven't heard anything for this year, but it'll be interesting, just the whole atmosphere of leading up to the game. As you said earlier, you know, you're getting strangers or people not really into soccer asking you soccer stuff. I'm getting invites to watch the final game from people who would never see soccer in their life, right? Other than the World Cup final or something like that.
Yeah.
So it'll just be interesting to see what the buzz of the city is and all that kind of stuff.
Well, here's like a little footnote on that was the other thing that, so after we finished the podcast, Andre and I tried to go out for food, which was going to be tricky after 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night. But in my neighborhood, we stopped in almost every bar. And they were full.
Mm.
So I'm at King and Strawn. Right. So there's like King Rustic there, packed with TFC supporters. Mm. You go to the Foggy Deep, packed with TFC supporters. We went to the Old York, which is usually the neighborhood pub that anyone can get into at any time, full.
Mm.
And you're kind of like, oh shit, it's like a Blue Jays effect going on around here, right? Where it was like these businesses were booming after the games. And it's like, it's nice for that, I think, for that to happen, where it's, because it doesn't happen very often, where people... That's the ripple effect of this success. I feel like we could I have so many like segues that we could go on and on about, but you know what? I think they're more relevant after the MLS Cup final. You know, I wanted to talk about like legacy and stuff like that moving forward. And I think those are all talking points.
Well, I want to know about the parade, but
well, you know, because I was going to say the interesting thing when you're saying about the week of events. I mean, the difference is obviously they would name the final. We knew who was hosting the final.
Yeah, yeah.
They could set it up like that. This one, it's a bit trickier when you get it in. You know, with the Grey Cup, we have a little bit, like, what, three more days? Yeah. And usually you would have, I think, 1 week for between the final and the semifinal.
Yeah.
I'm sure MLSE, with all their professional marketers and marketing department and all that stuff, will find some way to do as many promotional. I'm sure we'll have a nice Scott's Turf Builder event. We'll have a Metro event. We'll have a Kia event, a Wells Fargo event. A BMO event, all those sponsors will get their names front and center all week long. They're going to get their money's worth.
I know that exists. No, I'm just wondering if there is a parade, if they're going to bring the bus up.
Okay, here's knocking on wood. If Toronto FC wins the MLS Cup, they should get a fucking British double-decker bus.
Yeah,
open roof double decker bus.
Big deal.
Yeah, and parade it around.
Well, the irony is I think we've always talked about the parade. Right? Like, you know, it's always been an inside joke, but there's always been this idea of a TFC parade. And now we can literally, you know, not knock on wood. Like I was, you know, and again, not to dwell on it, but I thought, you know, this is the final, right? And so I thought the celebrations of the last game was a little too absorbing. I understand it. And I understand, especially with a game like that, but we have to realize, you know, it's going to be weird because, you know, most likely we'll do a, year in review podcast and things, we'll have another chance to speak. It'll be interesting on both sides. And, you know, I'm not trying, knock on wood, because I'm not trying to create a storyline. But if Toronto loses, you know, looking back on the season, the feeling the season provides will be very interesting thought perspective. And if, especially if they win, it'll be very interesting as well. But, you know, this is the game kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And we're also going for the double.
Yeah.
Although it's actually, in the MLS terms, I think it's four trophies.
We have Trillium Cup.
We have Trillium Cup. We have the Canadian Championship. We have the Eastern Conference.
Technically, we have a trophy there.
And we're going to win the...
All you're missing, you have the potential. A Canadian team has the potential, well, I guess American team too, to win five trophies in a season.
Yeah. Supporter Shield was the only one we didn't get. So.
But I'd almost say you don't want... Like, that'd be amazing, but it's like, to get the MLS Cup, you almost don't want to win... The supporter shield because that's the one that, like, that's a jinx in my eyes. If you finish first,
yeah.
You're not winning the title.
We haven't yet seen a dominant team to that.
Coast to coast, right? Yeah. I think that was the last. I think the only thing to tie in maybe in that point that I, because you're talking about where they were celebrating a bit, and I really hope that it was like the next day they just swept that result under the carpet. I was actually surprised that Michael Bradley lifted the cup. I heard Tannenbaum refused to touch it.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, a guy that I don't care for whatsoever. I'll give him maybe a wee bit of credit that he was smart enough to do that.
Yeah,
because that's the last thing to tie this whole this segment up with Seattle is that's maybe my one worry is that in 2009 this fixture we were confident of our team going into that. And on a, you know, it was almost at the other end of the year when it's cold and gross out. Now we're on the other side of the year where it's currently cold and gross out. We got the shock of our lives. So, the great good thing is that this organization has completely turned over pretty much since then. So I don't think anyone in the organization that connects it. Mm. It's just for me like a history lesson that we still know the job. We didn't have to go out there and do the business. And not underestimate this opponent.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think we've tried to outline that how good Seattle really is right now.
Yeah.
And now it's like I really do look. I am worried in like a nervous sense, anxiety of wanting my team to win. Not so much that I think we're going to fuck up or anything.
Yeah.
But just of that want to lift the trophy, and that it's like the job isn't done yet, and that's what I hope the message is this week.
Yeah.
Especially from players like Michael Bradley. I would expect Will Johnson is, you know what I mean? Like he's just having, I don't want to say sleepless nights, but I think he's like probably like a kid coming up on Christmas being like, wow, now I get another chance at this.
Yeah.
I better get in there and make this count. So I think there's a lot of guys on Toronto that are going to leave it all out there.
Yeah. And I think there is a sort of, certainly the last game, they looked probably the best I've seen them. And there's certainly a collectiveness in that, you know, they're on a destiny, they're on a ride, they're on a thing. Now, as I said, I think it's interesting because I think Seattle is on a similar. Seattle's a 500 team all season. They're in the final. So, you know, I'm sure they feel that they're a team of destiny as well.
And yeah.
So it will be interesting to have that clash. And again, I do not want to underappreciate what Toronto's accomplished. And I think at the end of the year, you know, retrospectively, you know, we should congratulate them and admire them for what they succeeded and achieved. With the celebration thing was less the game of, because I understand you're in the moment. It was like 3 days later, people were putting photos up of, you know, the cup, handing out the cup at the end. And I think there can be, you know, for the most part, I think people know what there is, but I think just because the MLS does stuff, I think that's part, you know, just to sum it up, I think part of being successful in the MLS is ignoring the MLS, right? Because I don't want to say they're there to screw things up, but as I said, you know, when you go to the show on MLS, there's going to be a lot of things happening around you that you don't care about, that MLS thinks you do care about, you know, like the top 40 pop star singing her hit at halftime. You know, I don't think you give a crap about that, but they'll be putting that on because they still think that that's what provides interest in the game.
They think it's a football game.
Yeah.
They think it's a North American sporting event.
Yeah.
And they think you need all that.
Yeah. They think that that's what sells crowds, when reality it's the, you know, as I said, you show anybody that game against Montreal on Wednesday and
it would be
hard not to be a soccer fan after that
game. I would guarantee you everyone at that game would have been perfectly happy walking in, no introduction, balls at center field. They blow the whistle.
Yes.
No fucking bouncy soccer at halftime. No, or pizza giveaways or t-shirt throwing. Right? Like, that game didn't need any of that stuff. Yeah. It's just obviously sponsors cashing in.
Yeah.
But no one in that stadium would have missed, obviously, would miss that. Yeah. So that's obviously the case. So, Aaron, I think we're going to leave it at that.
Sure.
We're getting at it. Oh, look at that. Right on the dot. Yeah, but we'll leave it there.
First rodeo.
Yeah. And so through the week, there'll be stuff going on, I think. You might kick a few things over, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. I'll try to do a analysis of the game and go in more detail on what we said in words opposed to speech. And then the other thing interesting, and again, I don't think now is the time to talk about it, but was that announcement during the game, pregame, about the Canadians and
MLS. Right, yeah.
So I wrote an article recently, and I think it's coming out very soon.
It might be up on now.
The side. Okay.
But people, if people are listening to this, because this might, I'm going to wait a day or two to post this.
Okay, so yeah, you'll see it. So yeah, the collateral from that will probably be in.
Yeah, you're going to get in trouble. A lot of Canadian academies are going to get their noses at a joint, I'm sure. Always funny, though. So everyone knows that they can find you at Prospect 11 and at EMB Sports.
Yep.
People know you can get me at Clark RNO or tweet at Red Nation Online or email info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. If there's anything in here that you guys want to discuss, anything you want to bring up after the MLS Cup final, I sometimes get tweets here and there during the game. I'll try to look at them. That's the next podcast, guys. Saturday night. Steve and I will be there. Probably, I wouldn't be surprised if Andre's in the neighborhood and wants to link up. That's going to be the last official match podcast of the season. I never would have thought it at the start of the year, and it's bringing a tear to my eye. Just thinking about it. On that note, guys, thanks again for listening for this preview podcast. Sort of in quotes, a pseudo preview, and we'll catch you next weekend. Thanks for listening. See you then. Want you to get involved, reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or by email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us, let us know how you thought the team did, agree, disagree, it doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.